Are there any trends that you're seeing today that you find to be particularly that kind of jump out of the page at you? Well, in pop music, it seems like there's a little bit of a trend towards some throwback styles.
Yeah.
Are you seeing a little bit of that alternative also?
Well, I mean, I'm seeing an alternative, but, you know, there's a lot of things going on. There's still, you know, the straight-up indie thing where there's a lot of people. So people, there's people definitely looking back also towards the synth music of the 80s and late 70s, like, mm-hmm. you know, from Gary Newman to OMD, and using the influences of some of that synth pop that's out there, mixing that in with it. Obviously, I think, you know, the Killers were a band that when they first came out, it was the same kind of thing. You know, you'd hear even, you know, some Duran Duran in there. You know, I'm using that as an example because it was the way people were fusing, you know, electronics. And now you've got this stuff they call dubstep, obviously, that's been popular for a year and a half, 2 years. And this EDM scene, which is like, you know, Skrillex and all these guys, mm-hmm. and Cascade and Deadmau5, who are crossing over huge and have huge audiences. So that EDM, the electronic dance music. But there's still, you know, there's still bands that play punk. There's still bands that play metal. There's still bands that, you know, mm-hmm. play like just straight up kind of indie, you know, hard, you know, music. So there's a bunch of different things going on out there. The trend is that people are starting more bands now than ever. They're creating more music than ever. And even though I think the industry is still figuring out how to monetize the situation, people are enjoying and listening to more music and discovering more music than ever. They still are, you know.
And it's been interesting to see too. It's such a nostalgia for some of the bands that were played on there. The ones that didn't stay together or necessarily have longevity, with something like the Stone Roses, there was such a clamoring for them to get back together in recent years. And, you know, and I think back to those days with 120 and everything, and it's amazing to see things come full circle
now. I love the Stone Roses. I'm so glad they're doing these shows.
Yeah.
When they got back together, well, it's not like they broke up the first time. They just took forever between albums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their first album, then they got signed to Geffen, did Second Coming, which some people felt was quite a disappointment, but it was hard coming off that first record that people loved and mm-hmm. so genuinely loved. But there were some good songs on the second record, too. I saw those shows when they came over mm-hmm. for the second record, and there were some great shows. And, you know, I like all the guys in the band. I mean, you know, John Squire and I had dinner, you know, and just hung out here in the city back in the day, and Ian Brown as well, and Manny and I, you know, the bass player who's also been in Primal Scream. I have a great memory of me, Manny, Wayne Kramer of the MC5, and Brian James of the Damned and Lords of the New Church, driving around in a station wagon, Wayne Kramer's station wagon around L.A. about 2001, and then going to Barney's Beanery to eat, you know, down over there.
That might be the most random grouping in the history of mankind.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lineage, if you really think about it, though. You got Wayne Kramer, of course, being first with the MC5. Then you got Brian James and the Damned, who were actually, if they weren't the first punk band, they were one of the first. Obviously, you know, that put out a full-length album. In the U.K., they were the first to do it. Mm-hmm. Ramones, and you could argue here that it was the Dolls, but the Ramones went straight up, too. And then, you know, you got that lineage from Brian. So you got Wayne Kramer to Brian James to Manny for the Stone Roses, uh-huh. right? And then, of course, you know, and me, I'm the odd guy out, but I'm not really that odd. But we had a great time, and I remember Manny telling me this story about how I asked him, you know, about that crazy adventure of the band trashing the record company Silvertone, their offices, Revolver Records over there, because they gave them such a bad deal. They, in their contract, and they just didn't know better because it didn't read correctly, and they signed this contract like so many people do when they're in young bands, and they don't really know. It was giving them royalties on vinyl and cassettes, but little did they know that the CD world, I mean, the CDs were already selling, mm-hmm. but little did they know it was going to just take over, and people were not going to be buying vinyl, and cassettes were going to become obsolete as well. Mm-hmm. Now vinyl's back, but, you know, at the time. So they did not make money off of any of those CD compilations that came out, because they repackaged, like, every single, every remix album. It wasn't just the Roses. It was the complete Stone Roses, and the best of the Stone Roses, and the Roses. And, you know, those guys were pissed off.
Sure.
But you can't blame them. I mean, that's their music. They're not getting paid for these recordings. So that's why they went and did a Jackson Pollock decoration of the record company's building and offices. And much like their record covers back in the day.
That just goes to show you how many different flavors there are of getting screwed by the system, you know, in there. We hear about this all the time with bands and everything. What you mentioned about vinyl and vinyl coming back kind of sticks in my mind, because when we were talking to Steve Perry on the show, I was getting quite an education talking to him when he was talking about all the different nuances of things that you can do with vinyl where it you won't hear it on the more high fidelity type things. And, you know, I'm part of, you know, the vast populace out there that's used to thinking of vinyl as a much more primitive kind of way of doing things. But the whole notion, I'm sure it doesn't come as a surprise to you. I'm sure you know all about this. All the different things you can do with vinyl that make it preferable in some ways to CDs or to anything that's electronic as far as the availability. I had no idea about that. It was fascinating to learn.
I think people loved it. You know, like, it's funny because I DJed in rock clubs, you know, and alternative clubs.
Mm-hmm.
3-4 nights a week, you know, for years to support myself. And I loved doing it, too. And I had a great following in New Jersey and New York. And but I remember how heavy it was to carry, like, 10 crates of records. And I would line everybody up to carry my stuff. We'd, like, unload the trunk of my car and get everything into the club. Because I wouldn't leave it there every night. I was too afraid of people stealing my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would bring it back home. But when the CDs came out, it was like, wow. Look how, mm-hmm. like, it was a relief because it was so light, but there is, mm-hmm. there wasn't as magical as using the vinyl. And I know what Steve Perry's talking about because the there's a warmth to the sound of the vinyl that is, you know, there's just something about it. It's the way that it's cut and the way it sounds. It's just, it's magical. But I'll admit, when I got my first, I was one of the first people who had a CD player back mm-hmm. in the day. And I remember just me and a few guys, you know, it's like college years, just going, dude, we're just sitting drinking tequila or mezcal, listening to like the first 5 CDs that I bought. You know, like when there were only really at that point, the only CDs you could get were from Europe. You bought mm-hmm. you could buy a CD player here, but you had to buy stuff from Europe. And I think I had like, you know, I can't even remember what it was, but it was all rock stuff, and it was. I remember us listening. Listen how clear that is. And now, of course, people are going back to vinyl. You know,
yeah.
So everything comes full circle.
It's all nostalgia. You
know? Yeah,
I can actually remember my first one. It was Stevie Ray Vaughan, Double Trouble. I think it was their live one. And
yeah,
I know what you mean because it was, even on a concert one, you could hear how much clearer it was.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think of what mine was. I think it was. You got to remember what time it was. So it was probably like Tears for Fears, The Hurting, their first album. Aerosmith, Toys in the Attic.
Mm-hmm.
Which had been out for a while. Like, it was what you could find, basically.
Yeah,
yeah, there mm-hmm. you go, right? So you remember what your first CDs were. But we were so excited to, like, I just remember how hilarious it was that it was actually an event that we're sitting around listening to them.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the night, of course, became quite blurry after the mezcal that I brought back from, like, Cancun. And then I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about? So when I mention Cancun, I'm talking about, I went there with my girlfriend at the time because the guys who owned the nightclub that I DJed in said, dude, it's a cheap vacation. There were only 3 hotels on the island then. And you could have dinner and a bottle of wine for like $3.
Wow.
You paid a dime to take a local school bus down to the town from your hotel. Of course, now I'm sure there's like 50 hotels on that strip. In fact, I think there's maybe more. But there were 3 then. So we're talking about like 1984 or 5. It was crazy. I don't remember.
Yeah, now they got all the cartel time. Violence, too. So, yeah, now it's...
Is there a lot of stuff going on there?
Yeah, I don't...
Cartel violence, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it hit Cancun, but there's like...
Oh, no. I mean,
I heard like Acapulco was like a war zone. So
I don't know about you, but I'm in no hurry to go to Mexico at this point. I mean, a lot of bands will go to Mexico City because the payday is huge for them, and they'll play these giant outdoor shows. And I get it, you know. But you better go there with like your own army.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't have to worry about that in this country. But
no, I know.
Well, we talked about 120 minutes. We talked about the podcast with MTV Hive. I'm trying to think here. We want to give a chance to get out there anything that you got going on.
Yeah,
obviously, you got your syndicated program.
Yeah, I'm doing a show, Flashback, which is a show that's on Cumulus Radio Networks. It's mm-hmm. everywhere. It's a rock history show. It's a classic rock show. And I so enjoy it because, you know, one of the things that was so exciting about when I was doing the morning show here in New York City was that it wasn't just new music. I played everything. So I play something from the 60s back to back, just like old FM radio, mm-hmm. with something from, you know, the 2000s or the 90s. I love rock and roll from every different era, and I just love great music from every era. Mm-hmm. So to do Flashback is such a joy for me because I get to talk about all that classic stuff, and I do that thing, Flashback News, which is really basically this week in rock history. And it's so much fun to talk about all the things that happened that week and to play songs from that period. Brings people right back, you
mm-hmm.
know. And if they weren't there, it makes them, they get that, they're in that time capsule. So it's a great feeling. It's a lot of fun.
It's great to listen to. I'm able to catch it syndicated there. And as you said, Cumulus stations coast to coast.
And it's not. It's and what's great is it's not just on Cumulus stations, which makes me even happier that it's you know, it's not just there. So a lot of other independent, you know, radio companies, communications companies are taking it, and it's also on the Armed Forces Network overseas.
Oh, okay. So they can catch
it
too.
And stuff.
Good.
So that's great. You know,
good.
It's a lot of fun. So and you mentioned you had Don Jameson as a guest, and you know, and Eddie Trunk, and me. You know, it's funny. What people don't realize is there was a period before. When I was doing that top 20 countdown of VH1 for a little while, and then I ended up leaving and was doing the stuff with Mark Cuban. But there was a time when the idea of guys sitting there talking about music, the original idea they had was me and Eddie doing it together.
Wow.
Because, you know, and then what happened was I ended up leaving, and then they had him and this girl doing the short ones. But she really, I don't know her, and I don't want to say anything bad, but just didn't seem like her heart was in it. And Eddie's the real deal. Eddie's like me. You know, we love music, and, you know, we're talking about it because it's what we live. So, you know, so we didn't get the chance to do that necessarily, but it was great that they modified the idea and came up with the metal show. And you know, Don Jameson, just so you know, this is a great story, which I want to tell you. I love Don. I remember when he started doing stand-up. He used to be a producer on a couple of my shows. Like, he worked behind the scenes at
MTV.
That's
awesome.
And then his girlfriend at the time, Chris Kosach, she and I and Jancy Dunn from Rolling Stone magazine were the first three VJs on MTV2 when it was M2 and when it was nothing but music for 24 hours. So, yeah, and isn't that amazing? So, yeah, so Don came out from behind the curtain.
Okay.
You know? The wizard's out. He's doing his thing. No, but and I'm glad to see that because I love Don.
Well,
a good guy.
You'll like this. I asked him about touring with Jim Florentine because I happened to catch them when they were coming through Cleveland. Yeah, and I asked him about that, and I said, you know, it seems like an interesting sampling of styles. You guys cover a lot of the same stuff, but it's in different ways. And he was going through, and he basically said, yeah, ultimately, you know, my set is like his set. But with a little bit of meth and Red Bull. And he basically said it's the same thing other than that. But
that's classic.
He was, yeah.
Meth and Red Bull. I don't know if that's enough if you can get up enough of those two.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was just going off the top of his head for the substances. Yeah. What can I think of to tell this guy?
What else can I say? You know, rocket fuel?
Well, what better way to bring it around on Matt than this? I wanted to tell you about this. I mean, this is a similar thing for us. Of what we did, because with this show, where nothing is off topic, hitting all kinds of different things here. You know, when Steve went and was booking mascots for us, the first two that he got were the San Diego Chicken and the Philly Fanatic. And now, for music experts, Eddie Trunk and Matt Pinfield. I feel like there's no place to go but down from here, man. Just like we are with mascots, we are spoiled for music experts. You two guys are the first ones we had.
Well, it's great. I'm sure, you know, Eddie's like me. We really appreciate the support. You know, we love music. We're grateful to work in it. It was a dream. I'm sure I'm speaking for Eddie and myself in the same way here because we've had many a conversation. And it's, you know, it was always our dream to work in music and to be around it. You know, Eddie, I'm sure like myself, we both loved radio from the time we were kids, wanted to be in it, even, you know, before MTV existed. You know, I mean, you heard me tell the story, Steve, when I got that award and I dedicated my father, you know, the Big Vision Award that night. But I, you know, my dad knew I loved radio so much, I was glued to the radio because I loved the music, but I also wanted to be talking about the music too as a kid. And I'm sure the same was for Eddie. And you know, I had this, my dad built this AM transmitter in my basement when I was 9. What's that? Yeah, he built me one. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So we just you know, it was like a kit, but it was so awesome. We ran, you know, we ran wire up the antenna, the TV antenna, and it broadcast about a block. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, hey, I had to start somewhere, so I started in my basement. And, I had all the other neighborhood kids come in and DJ when they weren't playing, like, Guns or baseball or, you know, or sneaking in other people's pools and, you know, doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
That's awesome. Your first taste of the business. Yeah, I mean, that was... You know, and tell me that the story doesn't end 2 days later with, like, a knock on the front door from the FCC.
That would have been exciting. You know, I always joke about that. It's like, you know, yeah. I mean, I would go to my neighbors, hey, go listen to me on the air. And I'm like, sure, okay. I'm trying to talk your neighbors into listening, and then you'd put on a record, and you'd run upstairs and go, wow, listen, I'm playing this right now. It's my station. Of course, it'd only go like 20, you know, it'd go like 15 yards. But it was exciting as a kid. You know, it's like that old thing you talked about, the FCC. That would have been exciting because that was like when I remember when Rob Zombie told me how they got the cease and desist order from Kiss, or maybe they didn't, for putting out God of Thunder. He was hoping they would. So it would bring attention to the band. Far be it from Brian, you know? It's like covering God of Thunder and dressing in, you know, in Gene's demon makeup. You know what I mean? But I remember Rob saying that. He goes, yeah, we would have loved that. You know? I think he was vindicated, though, in every way, though. Obviously, you know, he's... you know, he's played with, you know, and jammed with, you know, some of the Kiss guys and done the Kiss tribute at Rock Honors. And I laugh because one of my, you know, you talk about that, it's funny events and your music being involved. One of the great stories is Barbara Streisand, when she was marrying James Brolin, they wanted to, like, derail the paparazzi who was trying to listen in to, like, their nuptials and the music they were playing so they could report on it. So they parked a giant truck outside and blasted White Zombie's Thunder Kiss 65 over and over, just like they did to Noriega in the Panama Canal. And just tortured the paparazzi. We need more of that.
Well, I would have thought that would have been enough to throw them off the trail, because the notion of Barbara Streisand even listening to White Zombie, they would have been like, okay, we must have the wrong address.
Yes, it's Josh. It's probably their son who knew who they were, or someone else, or maybe just somebody who worked in the house.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Josh before.
I don't think a couple of 60-somethings.
No Country for Old Men period was into White Zombie.
Yeah.
Could be.
Could be. That's a hell of a story about Streisand. But, you know, I knew that, again, the day would be full of plenty of good stories from you, Matt. What a true pleasure to get to talk to you. Thank you so much for hosting us here at your office here at MTV2. We feel very fortunate to be able to sit down with you. We'd love to do it again sometime.
Oh, anytime, Rick. You let me know. It was great to hang with you today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, man.
Take care now.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, The Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.